Blog Talk Radio.
Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still think that it's alright.
Hey,
think of what I'm saying. We can work it hard and get it straight up tonight. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short and there's no time. Busting and fighting my friends. Hey, I am always told that it's a crime. So I will laugh you once again.
Hey, try to see things my way.
Hey,
only time will tell if I am right or I am wrong. Why you see it your way?
Hey,
that's that we might fall apart before too long.
We can work it out. We can work it out.
Like I know, if you've been watching the hearings from yesterday, and we weren't on last week, there was a whole lot of stuff that was happening last week that I wanted to talk about, but even more news happened this week that we want to pop off. You got the January 6th commission, the committee meeting, they're having a hearing, if you can believe the reactions of some people, and the Olympics. Olympics are always a special time for me. I always like watching the Olympics. If you're old school like I am, you remember the agony of defeat, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. That always reminds me of the wide world of sports back in the day. For all you youngsters, this is before you could had cable TV even, before you had a million channels, before you could choose which sports you wanted to watch on which channel, and they had their own individual channels. This was back in the day when ABC was the mother, the king, the boss of all sports. And we would watch Wild World of Sports every Sunday, and they ran it down, man. You could see Muhammad Ali fighting heavyweight fights. You could see all kind of basketball. You could see all kind of stuff, man, and certainly the Olympics. And I remember that one clip of the Olympics where they had the agony of defeat where the dude fell off the side of the ski jump. I was watching the Olympics when it actually happened. I think it was a trial. I don't know if that was – I think it might have been the Olympics, but that's how old I am. They've been watching a cut that they eventually used in the promo for Wide World of Sports. And I did volunteer work at the Winter Olympics in 1980 in Lake Placid, New York, when the hockey team became famous. So that music time, you know, the all that stuff, man, I'm into it totally, the Olympics. And having had an Olympic experience that was unique from just the average viewer, because when I worked on the Olympics, we were working to support the Olympics. It was a program with the YMCA, did a lot of things with the YMCA, the national YMCAs, and got an opportunity to do volunteer work at the Olympics. It cost us some money, cost my dad some money, but it was a very unique experience. We were providing support staff, also with other YMCA people from around the world. So we had people from Japan, Sweden, all Canada, from all other places, man. And it was really a fun time. We stayed in Lake George, and we'd have to get up early at crack of dawn to catch the little shuttle they had, a bus That would take us about an hour to Lake Placid. And we would do a volunteer work, working in accreditation. Most of us Americans had to work in the office because obviously, you know, we were the host country and we knew all the necessary stuff that was entailed. Some of that looked like we thought we were going to be down the element in the Olympic experience, which some did. And I was able to. I worked in the accreditation office. So I made up, I would make my own little laminates, you know, to get wherever I wanted to get. And my final job, I worked on one of the ski jump mountains or the slalom or the downhill race. And then I ended up towards the end working at Olympic Village. My job was, listen to me now closely, my job was just to make sure the press didn't bother the athletes, you know, the athletes that were no longer competing or their events were over. This was the year also too that Ty Babylonia and her partner Randy, I want to say Gardner, but they were the couple. And Ty Babylonia was of mixed race. I think she was a black, part of it was black, or that was one of the races that was mixed. And so that was a really interesting time that brought at least that, I think it was figure, they were paired figure skating, yeah, that brought that to our attention. Yeah, the 1980 Winter Olympics. 1980 was a good year because I was doing a lot of things with the, through the YMCA. Went to Russia. Did some. We went to Russia as representatives of the Youth Governor Society. Right. I was in the YMCA program, a Youth in Government program, Model United Nations program. You know my family history, and you guys know. My uncle, before he became involved in politics, got elected to office, was head of the YMCA Refugee Committee or something like that, where he was the international president and he would travel all over the world, which is why when he got in Congress, you know, he got some of the assignments that he got from the speaker because he had been to like over 80 countries by the time he already got to Congress. So he had relationships with a number of people, relationships with heads of state in Africa. And so he was very well known by the time he passed. He was known as Mr. Africa. But anyway, getting back to the Olympics, it was really a special time. And if you had an opportunity to work or even to go, obviously going anytime people get a chance to go, it's a different experience. You know, not everybody gets to. And certainly working, passing work, being up close to the athletes and stuff like that, it was really cool. It was a really cool experience, and that was the Winter Olympics. I can imagine I wanted to try and work at the Summer Games, which is going to be in the next 4 years, which is 1984 in L.A., but I wasn't able to get out there. That would have been successful, huh? Anyway, so we got the Olympics up, and often other fellows want to jump in on that, but also to this committee hearing, January 6th Commission, you know, my mom said a long time ago, and I would try to kind of talk over her or say she really didn't mean that or whatever, or say, no, let's not say that. And then I'm sure you guys are going to remember Wayne and Byron, that she used to call Trump Hitler. And she was right, wasn't she? As time shows, once again, mom was right about that. I used to call him a mob boss, the mob boss president. If anybody listens to our show, you can go back and find some episodes. We are on record as predicting or calling this man out what he truly turned out to be, right, as president. A mob boss, one of the officers yesterday talked about if a hitman, I think it was the brother, you know, if a hitman comes to kill somebody, you arrest the hitman, but you also arrest the person who killed him. And so that mob looked like they was coming to do damage to somebody, and they were sent there by somebody. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, that's what mob bosses do, right? So I think we kind of pegged this guy right from the very beginning, talking about 45, he tried to rip the country apart, and they're still trying to do it. And the Republicans, you've heard me call them the White Citizens Council. Basically, that's who they've decided to be. We got to call it like we see it and stop acting as if you know, that this egregious action is not racist, is white supremacy at its best, because that's what it is. And when these other elected officials call themselves that, members of the Confederacy, modern Confederacy, that's what they are, McCarthy, Jordan, all these other racists trying to make up for it, even the Fox Channel, those people trying to try to sweep it under the rug or act like it wasn't what it is. Yeah, they're racist. And it's time we call them that, stop playing, stop acting like we're going to be met halfway by these people. They will burn this you-know-what down, and I can say that because this is internet, but I'm not going to say the word, but they'll burn this place down before they will allow it, or they'll attempt to burn it down before they will allow America to live up to its true destination, its true destiny, which is we're going to make it really a democracy for everybody. And even though the people who wrote that piece of paper that Byron always refers to, and it's the Constitution and all that, these cats ain't playing by them rules, and they ain't thinking about that, and they're not even worried. It tripped me out how many people are so, I see these talking heads, and I see these individuals, and they're so surprised that how could they do this, and they went into the cap. They don't give a shit. They could care less, man. So let's stop acting like, you know, that these people have any type of rules or respect for anything when it doesn't work out the way they want it to, because they sure respected the cops when the cops were coming down on Black Lives Matter. They sure had their back then, huh? They sure respected America when Ronald Reagan and all these other racists were president. They sure respected it then, huh? But they don't have no respect for them. That goes to show you, if it ain't going their way, if it's not what they want, their version, democracy for them, then, you know, it's not what they want. And that's clear. That's clear. If you look at how these individuals are reacting to these cops giving their testimony and have these idiots get out there and try to, I didn't even watch their counter protests or whatever. You saw when the protesters stood behind them and wouldn't let them, you know, you had Gohmert and the inbred Congress lady, Green, and someone else trying to get out there and say this stuff, man, hey, I don't need to go down there because I don't do intimidation tactics well. I mess around, slap you in your lip, but that's where it's going. I'm not going to be walking around being scared. I grew up as a fan of Muhammad Ali. I'm a Muhammad Ali disciple. When I talk about heroes outside of my house, because my dad was my hero, my mother was my hero inside, but outside my house, Muhammad Ali, brother, Dr. King, Malcolm X. But in my childhood, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali said, we don't get along, so we got to get it on. He was down to get along with everybody, but if they had a problem, hey, you can step in that little square and work it out with them. And not too many people have the nerve to do that, or if they did, they found out they got a rude awakening. So that's what I'm talking about. See what these guys talking about. Let's bring in Byron Saunders, the legendary historian. What's up, Byron? How you doing?
Great to hear. And we're back. We're on. We're live. Thank you, Eric. It's wonderful to hear you. And you know what? I'm a child of the Olympics, and you're right. Wide world of sports. Come on now. You know, every weekend we were watching some of the best. And during the Olympics, and I have my own Olympic story like you, you know, and I usually talk about D.C., but I want to jump right into the Olympics thing because something extraordinary is going on with our sisters of color, no matter whether they're from Japan, from America, you just pick a place where colored people are. And they need to hear this. Simone Biles made a statement not just of her athletic greatness, Eric, but also putting America on notice that she is not your Negro, as James Baldwin put it succinctly. America, don't get it twisted, because she owes you really nothing. And after the competition is over, the question to ask America is, will you stand behind her to protect her individuality and health if she should falter and end up a vegetable because you and the global community put too much pressure on her and her fellow teammates and other athletes globally. More importantly, Derek is her own mental health and stability. We put too much on these young people and these young athletes to be the symbol of all that is both the good and the bad of a nation. And to expect her or any other to perform at the highest possible effort to capture a goal or just to be in the competition, Eric, under conditions not worthy. 15% of Japan is only vaccinated. We are putting these young people into a shitstorm. And then you want us, you want them to perform at the highest level? You don't do that. Why? Because NBC signed the contract 6 years ago, giving Japan billions of dollars for commercial rights to air it, even to the notion of postponing it in 2020 because of COVID. So when you walk into that stadium of 72,000 people, and there's only 2,500 people in the stands, what's your incentive to perform for the world? We, like you and I, we go to Carnegie Hall to perform for hundreds of people. And if there's only five people sitting in Carnegie Hall, how do you feel on that stage, Eric? That's insulting. And you want these athletes to continue to perform? We owe a debt of gratitude. We owe them a debt of gratitude because they are the ones who are sacrificing, not us. They're the ones putting their lives on the line, not us. For what? A cheap gold wooden Olympic medal? Mm-mm. Simone Biles is a new Shiro. Naomi Osaka, a new Shiro. I'm willing to bet you Sha'Carri Richardson has pretty been thinking about this. Why should I go over there and perform and then get sick? Because the country's going to penalize me for smoking a joint? Anybody can walk into a vape store right now and get CBD oils to put on your skin. Olympic athletes can't do that. So I'm going to take my hat off to the greatest of all time, like Muhammad Ali. And my dad, like your dad, Eric, my dad was the National Alumni Association for Tennessee State University. So after the 1960 Olympics, you know who was in my living room? The greatest sprinter of all time, because she went to Tennessee State. That's right. And other Olympics, right in my living room. My father introduced me to Cassius Clay. That's the biggest hands I've ever shaken in my life. That, you know, that was before he was Muhammad Ali. But I like you, Eric, because I have an affinity for the sport. I wanted to be a world-class athlete. I mean, I participated in the D.C. Junior High School City Championship, placed fourth in the 50-yard dash. And I probably would have finished better on a cinder track if my shoes fit my feet. You know, but it's all because it ain't winning the gold. It's the competition. It's camaraderie. You're with your fellow athletes from around the world, and look what they're doing. Simone Biles left the stage of receiving her silver medal to go hug the Russians. That's what champions do. We owe them the respect that they don't get. Just like the World War I, our soldiers went off to defeat the Germans. Black soldiers did real good, thinking that they'd come home and be respected. That was 1917. And you know what happened in 1919? Lynchings. There are stories in the South where black soldiers got lynched just because they wore the uniform.
That's right.
So at the point at which all this other stuff that's going on, because we'll get into the D.C., I will talk about D.C., but I wanted to give my respect to Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka, and all the other athletes there who are performing way above what we expect athletes to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, I watch. I'm an avid fan.
Who's the sprinter?
I root for everybody.
who's the sprinter?
I love it.
Who's the sprinter that was in your living room?
What's her name? Not Wyoming Tyus. from Tennessee State, won the fastest woman in 1960, Wilma Rudolph.
Oh, Wilma, wow, okay, wow.
Wow. Yeah, Wilma Rudolph.
Wow. That's
so,
all right.
So you see, the connections that we have, this is why our history is so important, Eric. We have heroes and sheroes that are in our midst of our lives. Our parents, your father, your mother worked extraordinarily hard to engage the brightest and the best of us. And we had access to them as children and as role models. You're right. I'm like you. Don't put me down in the streets today. I'm nonviolent, but I'm very angry with my country today. I'll stand for the salute the athletes when the national anthem is played. But you know what? I do not like my country right now.
Yeah,
I'm ashamed of what's going on.
I am. You said something interesting before we bring Wayne in, is how that we were exposed to some of these really historical figures. My father, as I'm watching the news, I reran the news back and they're doing a little clip on NBC, the local that comes on after the national, on a sister that's a black swimmer. And anybody that knows, there weren't too many recognition of black swimmers back in the day. I'm sure back in you guys, your Wayne's day, in my day. I remember being a slow swimmer that I tried out when I got on the community pool team as a kid. But there weren't too many of us. But what I want to talk about is being exposed to some of these really great people. My father was acquainted with Dr. King. I married Baraka, went to high school with my uncle. Same high school as my dad. Married Baraka, my uncle, the same track team. My father had a brief debate, a discussion with Malcolm X when he came to Rutgers University. Peter Rodino, who preceded my uncle in Congress, who was the Watergate prosecuting attorney.
Remember Peter Rodino, yes.
Jersey, I was able to meet him. In my own right, I was able to meet Jimmy Carter when I became involved with YMCA. So to be exposed to a lot of these people, to be alive in an era where a lot of stuff like going on now is happening in the 60s, right? And it's really something special to be able to meet, like you met Wilma Rudolph. My uncle taught one of Muhammad Ali, a young man who went on to become one of Muhammad Ali's bodyguards, named James Anderson. My uncle in high school, at Weeklake High School in Newark, and formed a fraternity. Took a clue from the black fraternities and colleges, and we formed a local fraternity for a lot of these cats were in gangs and all that, and had them in that. And so James Anderson was in one of the fraternities that my uncle founded, and it just so happened he was the father of a football player named Jamal Anderson, who played for the Atlanta Falcons when the Falcons.
Yeah.
He was the starting running back. So it's a small world, but being exposed to people, and then those people going on to do great things because they were exposed to great things, is really always something that leaves me in awe. And certainly my mother's time at WLIB with you, Wayne, and all of the history makers and the great black people that came through there. What a special time. But let's bring Wayne Gilman in, legendary newsman. Wayne, how are you doing this evening?
Just fine, hanging in here, trying to deal with the flip-flop with the CDC and the anarchy that seems to be pending in Washington. And like you guys, I applaud what's going on with our Olympic stars. It's funny. I was listening to what Byron was saying about Simone Biles, and I periodically tune in to sports talk in New York, more WFAN than ESPN. And it bothers me, some of the back and forth you hear from some of these commentators who are just paid to be just as imbecilic as some people that you'd see on Fox, you know, coming up with their aspersions as to why somebody would take a time out for health, mental health. You know, and I thought Biles put it eloquently the other day as to what she's doing. But, it, you know, it dawned to me. I was talking to a relative of mine earlier today, and that's a whole other story. you know, I'll talk about that off air because there was a TMZ moment, if anything. But the deal is that, you know, we were talking about how they used to beat up on the Williams sisters playing tennis.
Yeah.
And, you know, it occurred to me, you know, she had a point. I said, you know, Serena's like fading into the sunset. Her sister, you know, neither one has announced their retirement, but, you know, Father Time is catching up with them. So they got to find some new people of color to beat up on, and especially people who are perhaps not familiar with how robust and ignorant the press can be, and make statements about them to, you know, diminish whatever, you know, attributes they may have, and whatever, you know, they don't want to see greatness. And that's the thing that, you know, really bothers me about what goes on with today's press and how they're still with the back and forth. And this is why this country just never seems to get ahead. But, you know, coming full circle, I too applaud and was an avid watcher of the Olympic Games. My history is a little different. You know, my dad was a postal worker from a Caribbean island. My mom was a housewife and a paraprofessional teacher at a local school in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. But whenever somebody from the Caribbean representing any one of the islands, particularly Trinidad in track and field, oh, my God,
yeah.
Uproar in a house. Uproar, you know? And, you know, I only got a chance to meet the greats after I got into the media business. And I only had a chance to shake Muhammad Ali's hands once. And this is the time that he was married. He was just had gotten married to his last wife. And it was at a White House event. And I was just amazed at how huge an individual he was and how affable at the time. You know, it just saddens me to see what toll he paid for, you know, all the beatings that he took. But, you know, anyone who lived during that period, periodically I'll play back Billy Crystal's eulogy of Muhammad Ali, and it just brings an emotional pall over my head, tears to my eyes, because the man was just, you know, he could walk on water. You don't have people like that much anymore today. And I just had a chance to meet Wilma Rudolph briefly. I'm not even certain if she's still around, but, you know, I certainly am well aware of her greatness and things like that. But you're right about ABC being the mecca of worldwide sports and Howard Cosell. You know, this is Howard Cosell and Al Michaels and Monday Night Football. And
if Howard Cosell wasn't on, or Marv Albert in our neck of the woods, you know, and then eventually those guys, didn't seem like sports, did it?
No, it didn't.
He had that voice, right? By the way, Wayne, Wilma Rudolph passed away in November 1994.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. But you know, the thing about Simone Biles, which people don't really, because we don't remember 4 years ago, well, five now. She, you know, we're always asking black people to take one for the team. Huh? Simone took one for the team in 2016. And what did the U.S. do? Because people forget. What did the U.S. Olympics do for her when Dr. Nasser was put on public blast? He molested her and other gymnasts. So she took one for the team. See, don't forget. You know, what the black community do for Simone after the sexual abuse was put on blast? Crickets. Black women take it on the chin for the United States, black community, the church, and our families every day. But not this week. Athletes are joining Simone and standing by her and saying, you know what? Because I tell you, there's psychological warfare going on when you don't hear the crowd. You don't hear nothing. That's as they said, she got whatever they call it, the twist. And, you know, because at some point while she's flipping in the air, she could have fallen and broken her neck.
Right.
This is serious.
Absolutely right.
Go ahead.
You know, because I was just going to say, you know, she predicated all of her statements on the basis that her mental status was not there. It's not that the physical prowess and ability couldn't kick in.
Yeah.
But if you're not mentally prepared to undertake what you're about to do, better that you step away from that, you know?
Yep. Exactly.
And
the degree of difficulty for which she does her routine, she was getting downgraded by points because nobody else could do what she could do. Automatically, she stepped up to the platform, and whatever she exercise routine she's doing, nobody could do the difficulties that she does. And because they're so high in terms of the difficulty, significant factor of difficulty and whatever they are, is that that's ante because it becomes even more dangerous.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just saddens me.
I don't know what.
Yeah. So, I mean,
his Facebook was, he put a post up saying, talking about a champion, supposed to basically saying the champion, you know, they all go through doubt, but that's what makes a champion, all this stuff. You know, I mean, that's, for me, yeah, you know, you think about their traditional world champion fights through that, that's what makes a champion, but I'm kind of like, if she didn't feel that she was right with it, I can't be mad at her, especially someone like her who's accomplished, like you were saying, Byron, has accomplished so much, has done moves that they got two signature moves named after her. Her scoring was so far off the charts that the difficulty of some of the moves she did was so far off the charts, they didn't even know how to score her. So, you know, I'm not really, you know, if people are feeling a certain way, then I'm not going to question her, because who knows what other, you know, people want to talk about, you know, and I hear that she's catching a little hell out of social media, and Wayne, you talked about the jackasses on sports media. We know what that's like. That's just somebody having a talk show and you get to talk about something. But, you know, we don't know what challenges she overcame. We know what big, huge challenge she overcame with this predator that was abusing all the girls. And just the fact that her, one of them came back to do business with the U.S. Olympic Committee. A gymnastic committee, except for her. All the other girls are gone, right, that have experienced that. I don't know how many people have experienced that. But she came back. And plus, you know, it's not like she didn't raise the bar and have to sit back and wait for the next 10 years for someone to catch up to her. She did all that. So considering all those things, if she wasn't feeling right, and, of course, like everybody's been saying, that are coming with a reasonable standpoint, if you ain't confident, that's a sport where you can maim yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're right about this, then God bless her, right on, you know? I'm not mad at her for having to sit down or feel like, you know, my body's right and her body's telling her something. Same thing with Naomi. Like you're saying, they seem to want to come down harder, or those that talk. I'm going to ask you, Wayne, about guys on sports radio, on which particular show, because I can imagine what their ethnicity probably was. Individuals wanted, but this is, I'm talking about my Facebook friend is black, so it doesn't really fall necessarily along racial lines. But I just know that sometimes harsher criticism seems from.
Well, you know, the thing is that they're very subtle about it. I mean, I can't, you know, and again, I'm not even trying to bring reference or attention to the guys in the afternoon on that FAN. Everything is he-he-ha-ha, but the subtleties of what they're saying. You know, all of a sudden, Osaka is taking the stand that she's mentally incapable of facing the press. And now you got Biles, you know, what is that, you know, well... Oh, but you know so-and-so that, you know, that they have empirical evidence to show that they need a timeout, you know, that they've been approved by a medical. Isn't it kind of odd the Bounds and Osaka would be out at the same time and they take the stand and who's representing who here? It's that kind of ball that I just want to take my fist and go straight through my dashboard and shut the tower down if I could, you know. I mean, it's just it irritates me, but I think it's done for a reason because they figure, you know, they got me boiled up. There must be some other people of color out there. I know Art Russ Jr. is turning in his grave. You know, what more to say, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There was a white guy on the Bill Wallace show on NBC, the Deadline White House. He's a vet. I forget his name. Bald guy. He's got an organization, but he's a contributor on MSNBC. And he broke it down. He read it down. He said, yeah, the criticism is harsher against people of color. You know, and he's talking about the police officers, some mobiles, the police officers that are catching the most hell from the committee about the testimony, talking about how people were coming down on the Spanish brother and the black brother.
Right.
That get the most criticism from all these simpleton talking head individuals. And, you know, let's face it, this is America. And America has lived like that for a long time, right? Has ostracized or demonized or demonized people of color. That was the American way to a certain degree. In certain pockets, it still is the American way. So is it any wonder that individuals who happen to be of the privileged group fall in lockstep to do that? They're victims too, to a certain degree, right? They're victims of white supremacy too, because a lot of them are that buy into that notion are buying into something false that's not based in reality. And you can see it in the committee today. You got Cheney, Liz Cheney, who would have thought that she would have been the person to stand up like that. And the other, Kitzer, whatever his name is, I'm not surprised at him because he's always been an independent-minded guy. But who would have thunk that even the truth, that these individuals would stand up? I mean, I can't say who would have thunk that even the truth would be unacceptable because, like I said, that's how America has rolled for the last 300 years. That's what trips me out. All these people are like, I'm so surprised that they, that's who they are. That's who these individuals are. I'm not surprised that these guys, you know, I'm surprised that they disrespected their own, because, you know, Byron, you know more than I do. D.C., the capital of the area, those monoliths, those structures are built to pay homage to their society, right? They were built by slaves.
That's right.
Those are built to pay homage to their system that they built.
Yeah.
You know, they built these big monuments to glorify them. They weren't thinking about black people when they were building the Capitol and building the Washington Monument, building all these other fantastic structures that have been up for hundreds of years. We weren't in the thinking. We weren't in the mix. That was for them to edify and glorify themselves. So the fact, come to their capital, you know, and that's our capital too, but I'm just saying how it has been in this country. If they would come to the capital and disrespect it in such a way that was really a monument to their people, because we weren't included initially when that capital was built, when that White House was built, when all of those structures in D.C., our thoughts, our desires, our livelihoods, our lives, our human existence wasn't even considered. So to see these individuals come forward to burn that stuff to the ground because it was no longer what serving them, their purpose was really interesting because I was brought up to revere those places. I was brought up to say,
the question to ask America is, if you are an individual that participates in a failed coup d'etat to overthrow your government, what do you call those people?
Sound like terrorists to me.
They're terrorists, not only terrorists, they're traitors, and they committed an act of treason. You see, the word treason has to come into play, because when you talk about insurrection or you're talking about a riot, you know, you say a riot today and you think about black people. But you talk about insurrection, okay, now we're talking about some monkeys, some zombies trying to break into the Capitol. But when you call them Republicans and you call them traitors and you engage them in acts of treason, because that's what they did, they participated in a failed coup d'etat. That's as plain and simple as you can get it. You can strip everything else away from it. Because they came to overthrow the government.
And what's the penalty?
That's what they were doing.
What's the penalty for treason?
Please? At the direction of the president.
The penalty for treason, since you did ask, I actually happen to have this by standing right here in front of me. It's called 18 U.S. Code 2381, United States Code, Treason, Sedition, and Subversive Activities. This is the way it reads, gentlemen. Treason, ever owing allegiance to the United States, levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned no less than 5 years and fined under this title, but not less than $10,000, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. That's the way the law reads. I didn't write it. I'm just trying to tell you. So you got 147 GOP senators and congressmen right now who are traitors, who have committed high crimes of treason, and they walk around la-di-da-di in the halls of Congress. They committed treason, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I heard the Speaker of the House call one of them a moron. As far as I'm concerned, they're all a bunch of morons.
Yes. That's right.
You know.
So, I mean, you know, the stature of the law says itself. I mean, I don't make it up. I'm just reading it to you as it is. That's why I say we have got to stop calling them insurrectionists. That's a misnomer. Call them what they really are. They're Republican traitors. You see, when you put the nomenclature Republican on it, now you're signifying who they really are by party. And this committee that's ongoing right now is about to name some names. Gentlemen, stand by. The shit's about to hit the fan bigger than you can even imagine. And being down here in Washington, I got to tell you, I said this a few weeks ago, and I still hang to it. Our nation's capital was raped. It was raped. Violated.
Yeah.
That's what rape is. It's a violation. It's the same way. It's the same way with you know, well, we got rapists now who are denying it was rape. You know, it was we both admitted that we wanted to have sex. No, you raped her. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're denying it's rape. See, we have to really put it in the context. If rape is as bad as it is, which is a violation of a woman or a man, because some men have been raped, so what if that's a heinous crime, an act of overthrowing your government has to be higher than rape.
Right.
You know.
You're going to say, Wayne?
No, I just wanted to throw in, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, what's happening, you know, now and all the subtle social media talk about Trump coming back in August is something to go down. You know, I don't know. I've gotten a couple of robocalls from Sharpton's office this week. I'm assuming he's probably sent one to you all about the impending march on the 28th of August. You know, I kind of wonder if any of those clowns are going to show up to, you know, cause mayhem. You know,
they might, but I can tell you the high alert has not been removed from Washington, D.C. In fact, once they took the fences down last week, we are still on a high alert.
So what's supposed to be another march on the 28th? Is that it, gentlemen?
For the voting rights bill. You know, they want to make sure
Reverend
that goes
Barber
through.
And Action Network, Reverend Sharpton, and other coalition groups who are going to be here to engage the Voting Rights Act. Now, as of today, guys, the infrastructure bill probably will be passed on Friday. That's where we are right now. As of today,
I hope
late
so.
This evening.
Yeah.
So the next phase,
the Green Reaper said he approved it.
Yeah, yeah. They got 67 in a straw vote today. They got 67 votes in the Senate.
Well,
so this is where it is right now. The infrastructure bill. So $1 trillion infrastructure bill. $550 billion of the $1 trillion is going to airports and roads and structures. I mean, really, truly infrastructure. So it's bipartisan. So that. That you'll be able to take that off the table, because right behind it, if they don't pass it tomorrow or Friday, it'll go into reconciliation, and we already got the votes for that because the commitments from Manchin and Sinema are now in lockstep with the party. That's as of late this afternoon.
What was AOC complaining about, though, Byron? I don't know if you got wind of that. There was some progressive elements within the Democratic Party that they didn't seem to favor everything, or there was some talk about weren't people of color in the room.
What they were against, and this is the way bipartisan stuff works, even within your party, you want a piece of the pie. So what can you break off from my constituents? That's what it comes down to. See, you got to read between the lines. It's the horse trade time right now. They're horse trading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're in the back room with the cigars and okay, what can you give me? I'll give you my vote, but I need something from my state. What can you give me? That's why they're writing the specifics of the bill right now. But as of this afternoon, Romney and other Republicans who were part of the bipartisan coalition have shaken hands and would say we got a deal.
Right.
Because it gets there's something in it for everybody, really, when you talk about infrastructure.
Something in it for everybody, exactly. And that's what Manchin was holding out for, as well as Sinema. You know, they wanted to know, what can you do for my state? All right? That's
right.
Easy. You're important. West Virginia is one of the poorest states in the Union. Yeah, you need lots of support, you know?
Yeah.
Arizona. You know, y'all trying to keep them right in terms of a fraud count, whatever that stuff is all about. You
Please.
Know, but the Republicans... Yeah, right. So it comes down to follow the money. Follow the money and who's signing off on it, because they got a piece of it.
Well, that's a natural aspect of government and all
that's
of that
right.
comes together. Everybody
that's
wants
how government works.
They used to call it bringing home the bacon. But also, you want to make sure that your district is taken care of, obviously. That makes sense. It's what people get elected. And so,
Now, with respect to, here's something else, gentlemen. This has happened as of yesterday.
Hold on, B. As I was going to say, my cousin is responsible for a certain amount of money that's coming to his district. I think a couple hundred million, I guess, for the Gateway Tunnel, which is not just his district, but his wealth.
Yeah.
As well as other parts of Jersey, and fixing roads and things like that. He's a chairman of the subcommittee of railroads, pipelines, and hazardous materials, I believe. So that's something that they kind of have to keep an eye on real quick. You wanted to say Byron real quick, and then I want to move to something else. I want to move to Fauci versus Rand.
Yeah, there are two things that happened over the last 2 days that are critically important to pay attention to. Number one is the mask mandate, because the first federal agency mandated is the Veterans Administration. The reason why that's important is that because from there they can move to every federal agency, including all military personnel, must be vaccinated. So the guidelines are coming down fast. So stand by, because it's rolling like thunder at the moment. And the mask mandate will be for all federal agencies, at least, and the military. So that's as of yesterday. And the other thing that happened, Justice Department released a memo declaring that that no one is above the law in terms of being able to be subpoenaed for the committee, and that all parties, every congressperson, even the president, are eligible to be subpoenaed for moving forward. So all that immunity stuff, off the board, off the table.
Thank God for that. And that includes the last president, not the current.
That includes the last president, exactly.
They cannot let the federal government is not responsible for paying for their legal fees. I think Mo Brooks, Alabama tried to act like he was doing that as a part of his job as a legislator.
Yeah.
And no, that is actually campaign activity. So you're going to be liable for that, and you're going to have to pay for that. And the feds are not going to pay for his legal fees. And also, if they had ruled in his favor or agreed with him, it would have been the federal government that was up on charges as opposed to him himself. So that also works with what you're saying, because it paved the way for Trump, when he comes, not to have the federal government to have to pay for it, his legal representation as well. I wanted to move on some things from last week that we didn't get a chance to. I particularly liked, I saw the Brooklyn come out of Dr. Fauci when he had to set Rand Paul straight last week. I don't know if you guys were able to.
Finally.
That was WWE SmackDown.
It was completely enjoyable. You know, he had to check him. And you can also find the clip online where Rand Paul is having a little virtual town hall, having people call in. And they said, we're going to open up the phone lines, and you want to talk to Congressman Paul, Senator Paul, call in. A woman calls in and says, Senator Paul, I'm one of your constituents, and I just want to tell you to get effed. He's sitting there, and the lady sitting there with such a look on her face, but it was priceless because, I mean, there are, let's be real, there are a lot of assholes in government, and certainly in the federal government, there are a lot of assholes. It might vary depending on who you are, who you think is an asshole. Personally, I think Rand Paul falls in that category, as I do Jim Jordan, Ted Cruz, and other individuals, Louis Goldberg. I think Green, Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, people like that fall within that category. And you know, I think that it was very deserving. I was really happy to see Fauci jump on and let him know what time it was.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what happened when you have Joe
Biden.
That was Donald Trump as president.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, one more thing, Eric. The Federal Appeals Court today rejected an attempt by former President Trump and three of his children to force arbitration in a class action lawsuit accusing him of fraud. So even that, he lost that case today too. So the kids and his business, Trump businesses, this opens the door for Trish James of the Attorney General of New York to proceed with the case against his organization and the kids. So he lost that in an appeals as of this afternoon.
Well, that can't move fast enough, I tell you, Byron, because, you know, the bottom line is he's still out there campaigning. And as long as he has that traction to raise money, you know, he says it's for, you know, future political activity. But we all know he's trying to line his pockets because his empire is falling apart. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But that man needs to be locked up. You know, there's no question. I mean, every time I see certain portions of what happened on January 6th repeated on TV, and just the, you know, the pall that we were all under in the last 4 years under his administration, not knowing which way was up, it was a very uncomfortable period in my lifetime in this country, just witnessing what was going on, because it seemed to be the beginning of the end, you know. And it ain't quite over yet, because you still got these morons who feel a certain way. But if we could just – you're never going to get, a quorum of people who are going to feel in lockstep with what goes on. There's always going to be somebody out there. But if we could just keep them at bay and stop having all these uprisings, you know, and bring about a certain level of civility, I think, you know – life will continue the way it should.
I don't know about keeping them at...
Well,
I think we need to eliminate them and to get arrest them and get rid of them, treat them like the traitors they are. It might be time for aggressive people to start flexing their muscles in these marches and things like that and let these people know, you know, if y'all want to get stupid, we got some stupid people with us too. Don't show up at the peaceful marches because we tell them to stay home because they don't have the temperament, you know. But if you want them, we'll come on out. They're ready to come out. Trust and believe, you know.
We got
3 minutes of change left. I'm going to just touch upon a couple of things real quick that really kind of ticked me off. First is, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed that I was driving home last week and I saw smoke in the air. You know, I was on the highway, like an upper ramp highway. I thought there was a fire somewhere in the area. It wasn't thick like it was right there. And come to find out, this was a smoke blowing across the country from the wildfire.
Yes.
And they say that because of climate change, these fires are burning hotter and faster. Now, you have these idiots who refuse to acknowledge climate change. And here, I mean, between the Delta variant virus that these idiots are, you know, same crew of idiots that deny climate change or denying the virus and were down with Trump and don't want to get the vaccine, it seems as though we have these people that are hell-bent on destroying what the reasonable people think should be kept going, you know? And that's the nicest, most politically nice way I could put it. That these jackasses constantly are putting us in danger. Literally putting us in danger because of the way they think. Because it's a political thing to these people, these racists. Farm workers, the farm workers, the people who pick our food, they get shitted on. Excuse my language. They don't even get water breaks. They have no shade. They're fighting for all of these things. They're working for less 90 seconds. Look at that. They're probably working for less than the daily minimum wage. It's ridiculous what's going on. And these idiots are trying to hold on to this old system of America. Are going to drive it. Intent on driving it into the ground. You guys want to give final thoughts real quick as we've gotten to this last minute. We must have been talking about some stuff because time flew by, brothers.
Time flew by. Well, I'll give my last thoughts. My heroes and sheroes of this week, we already talked about Simone Biles, but I want those four officers from the Capitol Police. They are American heroes. Thank you, gentlemen, for saving our democracy. Peace and love always.
Well put, my brother. We'll talk to you again soon. Maybe Friday, maybe Saturday.
Yes,
we got too much to talk about. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Give the people your sign-off and last thoughts.
Yeah, gentlemen and everyone, man, keep hope alive as usual. I echo the sentiments of Byron Saunders a moment ago, a defining moment in our life this past week, and hopefully things will progress as time goes on.
There it is. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. We'll talk to you again soon, Wayne. Thanks.
All right.
Wow, time flies when you're having fun, everybody. Lieutenant and friends, I'm Kay's son. Check me out on Instagram, Eric Payne, Freedom Fighter, or Eric Payne, Actor, on Facebook. Thanks for listening, Kay's son and friends. We'll talk to you again on another episode.
Is the baby in her mind? And all the things she wants to